So, NEMSAC members.
Conference record has joined the conference.
All right. NEMSAC members, when I call your name, I ask that you hit #6 to unmute yourself and say that you are present. In no particular order, we'll begin with Dr. Jeff Salamone.
Present.
Linda Squirrel.
Present.
Thank you, Linda. Ken Nipper. Ken on? Come on. I'll give Ken another second. Chief Gary Ludwig. Jim McPartland. See that Jim's on the webinar. Jim, can you hear us? Kyle, I see you're on as well, but can't hear.
Oh, hey, no.
Hello?
Oh, hi. What do we have on? All right. I think I heard Kyle. Mark Goldstone.
Kyle's here.
Thanks, Kyle. Is Mark Goldstone on?
I am, and I'm disappointed that I don't have a cool title like chief or president or doctor.
Esquire. There we go. Thanks, Mark. Dan Patterson.
Can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Dan. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Troy Hagan.
Here. I'm here. Did you get that? Troy's here. Can you hear me? Troy's here.
We've got you, Troy. Can you hear us?
I can now. I didn't hear anything.
Okay, maybe we need to shift. Is Tom Judge on? Is Bob Oning on the call? Loge Barnes.
Here.
Thank
Hello?
You, Barnes. Matt Tatum.
Tatum, here. Matt Tatum, I'm here.
Thank you. Sherry Lynn Almeida. #6 to unmute and *6 to mute. Dr. Sani.
I am here.
Hi, Riju. Thanks. Dr. Wright. Joe Wright. Right. Thanks, we spoke earlier. Can you hear us?
The leader has unmuted your line.
Hello?
Guys, Jim McCall.
Back here.
Can you hear me?
We got a few people talking at once. It's Scott Summers on.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Scott. Thank you. And who else right before Scott?
Dennis E.
Back.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi,
it's Mike Nugent on the line.
Art Cooper's here as well.
Hi, Art. Thank you.
Jim
McCartney. Mr. Nugent on the line. Is there anyone else who is having difficulty saying their name who would like to call present now?
Ken Miller's here.
All right, I've got Ken Miller and who else?
Sabina Braithwaite.
Thank you. These are any other NEMSEC members on the line? Who I have not called.
Jim
Wingrove here. Can you hear me?
Gary, we've got you. Thank you. Wingrove.
Jim McPartland.
Yes, sir, Jim. We got you.
Okay.
This is Sherry Almeida. I don't know if you got me.
Oh, great. Hi, Sherry. Thank you for joining. Thanks. Bax, can you hear us now, Bax?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Thank you. Looks like we have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Drew, some introductory comments, please. Okay.
The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Okay, thank you, Aaron, and thank you all for your patience as we got through the roll call. It's kind of a combination of the folks calling in and the webinar, which is can be a little confusing, so thank you very much. Aaron, congratulations on your appointment and chairing your first meeting of the National EMS Advisory Council.
Thank you.
We're confident that you're going to do a wonderful job. And good evening, or good, not evening yet, good afternoon to everyone, all the members of NEMSAC and all the folks from throughout the nation who have joined us. I'm Drew Dawson. I'm the Director of the Office of Emergency Medical Services at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And in that capacity, I also serve as the designated federal official for the National Emergency Medical Services Advisory Council. I'm very pleased today, as we have just found out, that we have a majority of our NEMSAC members on the phone today, and we have a number of folks from the public and our partners from a variety of federal agencies as well. Excuse me. At our last in-person meeting of NEMSAC in April, the Advisory Council spent a considerable amount of time on the development of a position statement on the role of a federal lead office for emergency medical services. That position statement was submitted to the Federal Interagency Committee on Emergency Medical Services and was used in part to form an options paper on the same topic by FICOMS, which was delivered to the White House National Security Staff in May. At our last FICOMS meeting in early July, we heard from the National Security Staff that they're still working on the interagency policy issues surrounding this topic. I'd like to thank the NEMSAC, particularly for their thoughtful deliberation on that topic during their last meeting, and hope that the discussion of the role of the federal government and EMS can continue in this venue and in other venues. Also, at our last meeting, the group discussed progress from the National Culture of Safety Strategy Project. And today, we are fortunate that Dr. Sabina Braithwaite will be on the phone with us to provide an update from the American College of Emergency Physicians for their work on our behalf on the National Culture of Safety Project. A little bit later in the meeting, I'll also be providing a short briefing on the deliberations during the last FICAMS meeting that was in July. I'll look forward to a lively discussion today during the webinar and look forward to seeing you all at the September meeting in person. So welcome to everyone, both MSAC members and our federal partners and members of the public to the webinar today. And back to you, Mr. Chairman, sir.
Thank you. Looking at our agenda, we have a lot of things to cover in a short amount of time. One of the business pieces that we need to cover is approval of the minutes from the April 2000 meeting. I would be open to a motion to approve and a second, and then discussion. So to unmute your line, again, that's the pound six. If somebody would be so inclined to make a motion for approval.
Scott Summers, I'll move to approve.
I have a motion for approval. Do I have a second?
Sherry, second.
I heard Sherry. Thank you. I have a motion and a second to approve the April 2011 minutes. Is there discussion? Troy, I did get a copy of the email. Thank you. We'll make that change. Troy had pointed out a acronym that we had wrong. It should have been the National EMS Management Association. Any other discussion from council members?
Yes. Aaron, this is Tom Judge.
Louder, Tom.
On page 12, there's a quote to me that I don't exactly think it doesn't make any sense, and I think we ought to just strike it out of there because I'm not exactly sure. It says, Mr. Judge said there was a lack of respect for evidence. Basically, the quote is, it doesn't make any sense. So.
Okay.
Like, I would just strike those.
So noted. Other discussion? Hearing no other discussion, I think the way we'll do our voting is to ask if for abstention, so if you disagree or want to vote against it, rather than having everybody on mute and sing in. So would there be any opposed to the minutes as amended, the correcting the acronym to the National EMS Management Association and striking the quote from Tom on page 12? Any against? Hearing none, motion passes. The minutes are approved as amended. So what we'd like to take up next is a presentation from the committees, and I'd like to move the order around just a little bit, knowing that the Safety Committee has sent us several documents for discussion. I'd like to hit some of the committees that I know have very short reports, such as RITU for education or for MORE and MAT for Education and Workforce, and then take system finance and then end with safety, kind of allowing us a little bit more time to have a discussion on the work that the Safety Committee has done. What I would like to ask for all of us in this discussion is, again, recognize the webinar tool is, the conference call is a little bit difficult, so if we could use good economy of our words when we share our thoughts. The other thing I wanted to mention is we've had a little discussion about process. So in the past, when we've had white papers or we've had official advisories, that process has been a draft, an interim, and then a final. We've had those three steps. So what we have coming forward from the Safety Committee is a little bit different. So what I'd like to suggest that we'll do is today have a really robust conversation about their work. and then ask the safety committee to hear that discussion, hear thoughts and opinions from the council members, and then ask the council members to be prepared to officially vote on that work at the September meeting. That way we can have, again, that robust discussion, give some feedback to the safety committee, and then be able to take it up in an official way for approval at our September meeting. So just to share a little bit of process with the council. So what I'd like to do is ask first, Ritu, if you would give us a brief overview of where medical oversight and research is at and kind of your path going forward, and then we'll go with Matt for education, workforce, then system, then finance and safety. So Ritu, pound six, and then if you could give us an update.
Okay. Can you hear me, Aaron?
We can. Can you hear us okay?
Yep. Just wanted to make sure it worked. Thank you, Aaron, and again, congratulations on your appointment or condolences, whichever. The Medical Oversight and Research, or Oversight Analysis and Research Committee, actually has really no new activity to report for this particular meeting. So what I can do is talk a little bit about what we had set as our two topics to work through, and some of the side conversation that I've had about pulling in some resources to help us. But basically, we have two projects or two topics that we've identified as our main focus for the remainder of this term on NEMSAC. One is the evidence-based guidelines project that Dr. Wright is the principal investigator for, and sort of a overview and discussion about the effectiveness of the project right now, but more importantly, about the long-term viability of using such a demanding, resource-demanding process and for moving forward, and whether or not, and sort of coming up with a set of recommendations from the EMS community to NHTSA around that. Joe has spoken with Kathleen, and I know I've mentioned it to you, but Kathleen Brown is currently one of the folks that we've identified that we'd like to have as an ad hoc member of our committee, as she's sort of the lead on the project to do the evidence-based guidelines, as well as Eddie Lang, who is an expert in the grade process that we utilize to identify the actual papers and work through the evidence-based guideline process. That's the first one. And then the second issue that we've talked about is data management, as well as this kind of implementation and utilization of data in EMS. We touched on in the last term of NEMSAC very briefly some of the NEMSIS 3.0 issues, now that NEMSIS 3.0 is beginning its is being rolled out and becoming implemented. We want to then open up the discussion on sort of how do we best use that data, how do we encourage use, and those sorts of things. And had some preliminary discussion with Clay Mann from Utah, who's where NEMSIS lives, and certainly, Aaron, this is a topic that's near and dear to your heart, and integrating Clay into our committee to also discuss these further issues. Like I said at our chairs meeting, there's been not a lot of activity in the last few months with this, and we're looking forward to having, though, a busy and a very interactive fall with the Oversight Analysis and Research Committee. You asked for
a
brief,
you.
And that was brief.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's see. Matt, Education Workforce, please.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm technically challenged. As with Ritu, Aaron, congratulations on your appointment as chair.
workforce and education, we don't really have a lot to update. We've been trying recently to try to get a conference call together with the committee, and it looks like we're going to try to get actually be successful with that. Unfortunately, it's after this meeting. Within the next 2 weeks, we'll be getting together. We're still working on leadership training and education and development, I guess would probably be a better word, due to and working on succession planning for EMS agencies. And the other avenue we are still have high on the forefront is the public education piece as it relates to EMS. And Mr. Dawson just forwarded a document to me last week, the agenda for the future as far as workforce agenda for EMS, and I've circulated that amongst the committee members. And just a real quick review of that, it has a lot of great information in there, a lot of data and everything to get us even better focus. So, again, brief report, not a lot to activity going on since the last meeting, but hopefully we will be quite busy before the September meeting.
Thanks, Matt, and we certainly look forward to having you guys go through that workforce agenda and share with us your thoughts. Kyle, systems, please.
This is Kyle. Can you hear me okay?
Thanks.
Can you hear me okay, Aaron?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yep. All is good. The Systems Committee has met during the interim since the last meeting in April, and we are continuing to pursue the three primary functions that that the council laid out for us. The first is a subgroup headed up by Scott Summers on EMS as a central government function, essential public function, if you will. And Scott has been gathering some data related to EMS and its role in the economic and public health environment. In the context of that, one of the things that Scott has discovered is that there is a relative paucity of information on EMS and its economic role. And so one of the things I think that we may wish to move forward on is a first policy statement related to EMS and its function, but also some work and maybe or some assistance in gathering or at least generating more research on the topic. So we may be looking for some help for that. The second piece is related to evidence-based support for EMS system design. And as we all know and have discussed, there is virtually no information on what types of EMS system design improve patient outcomes. So we're trying to link the overarching structure of EMS systems with patient outcomes, and are having difficulty doing that, quite frankly, because we don't have very good information. So that said, one of the things I believe that we will come forward with is a request, a plea for more information regarding evidence-based support. And perhaps Lori Flaherty can help us out with that, or perhaps we can get some assistance from the technical contract that Drew announced was available. So we'll be looking for a request for that at or before our September meeting. The second issue, the final issue, is related to the movement of EMS, the EMS workforce around the United States, and there are, in essence, two processes and not necessarily parallel processes at play. The first is reciprocity for the purposes of an EMS professional that wishes to move from one state to another to for employment reasons and stay there relatively permanently or else work across state lines on a relatively permanent basis. So the context of interstate credentialing is fairly important to the workforce. But second is the nature of how EMS professionals will be utilized in the event of a disaster or an emergency where there may not be the ability to for states to collaborate on last-minute licensure reciprocity. So, for example, we have all sorts of teams set up in the system that may respond to any state or even outside of the states. And the question is, what are their scopes of practice when they're used in that function? Further, there's military medicine that freely crosses state lines, especially in disasters. I think we have to develop a structure, recommendations for a structure to manage that or to respond onto military facilities. And finally, there are different types of air ambulance services, both rotor and fixed wing, that freely respond across geopolitical boundaries that will have to have some sort of credentialing, interstate credentialing process to ensure that they're operating within the law. So those are the three processes. On the first two, I expect we'll have more information, perhaps one or more position statements. And the third has its own complexities, but we will be moving forward with that as well. That's my report, Mr. Chair.
Finance, Troy.
Okay, can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you.
Aaron, can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead, Troy.
All right. The Finance Committee has been busy doing a lot of research, I would say. We have three different assignments assigned by NAMSAC. First was reimbursement based on readiness and performance standards. The second was evaluating treat and release and reimbursement for those services. And the third was evaluate equitable federal grant access for EMS. Most of our research has been around the reimbursement structure for readiness, performance standards, and treat and release. We've evaluated several different projects. So we looked at the documents that led up to the national fee schedule, the project HOPE document, the Government Accountability Office report from 2007, and also the EMS cost analysis project that Brooke Lerner has been working on through the Medical College of Wisconsin. And we've run into, I guess, a lot of snags, you would say, as we go forth and try to develop some type of finance methodology out of those reports, which I think are probably the three most complete analysis of EMS cost. The first two, Project HOPE and the Government Accountability Office, really looked at mostly transport agencies and ambulance services and not total EMS system cost, where Brooke Lerner's project looked at the total EMS system, but there are some notable gaps in that, as even she alludes to, is that it's extremely difficult to to incorporate and include under any standardized format total EMS system cost. So I think, you know, the common theme that the committee has identified throughout all those documents is it's really difficult to compare one ambulance service or one EMS system to another because of the huge variability amongst all the different organizations and the systems. So what we're kind of working on is developing a methodology or a work plan to see if we can really come up with some guiding principles, standard definitions, and a methodology in which we could determine true EMS system cost and reimbursement structures and other funding structures that might be able to go with it. And so we're busy working on developing that and putting together a work plan to accomplish that goal. One of the other analysis pieces that we've been doing is trying to look at all the different EMS components as defined on those different documents and by former NHTSA publications is to see where exactly does EMS fall. We always say it's at the intersection of, you know, public health, public safety, and medicine, but is it truly at the intersection where we're equal, or is it predominantly in one or the other, and where exactly does EMS fall? So we're going through an exercise to identify that, and another exercise in which to identify where primarily it's funded from currently, and potential future funding options, and whether that's by discipline or by local, state, or federal levels, or where exactly that falls. So working on a lot of different pieces right now and trying to put that together. The last part on the federal grants is, you know, what we'd like to do is determine why EMS isn't getting the grants. And so we've been doing research on that to determine is it a lack of knowledge, not knowing that they're out there? Is the process too cumbersome, or are we know they're out there and we're applying for them, we're just not getting them? So again, looking at and looking for some of that research to see if we can help answer that question, and then develop a process on which to assist EMS agencies. And we did go through an exercise actually at the last in-person meeting about what EMS agencies could apply for, what is the gaps out there that federal grant funding or even state and local grants could assist them with. So that's part of the list and part of the process as well. So and also developing a work plan and putting that together of how we can help out EMS agencies. And that is my report.
Thanks, Troy. Tom, did you have a question for the Finance Committee?
Yes. Can you hear me, Aaron?
We can. Yes, please. Go ahead.
Thanks, Troy. I understand that Senator Ben Nelson has or is about to introduce some legislation for CMS to reimburse for community paramedicine services. That's a bit different than treat and release, and I'm just curious as to the discussion at the Finance Committee. It's a much broader, I think, piece of work than just, you know, what's been commonly referred to as treat and release. So, and I didn't know if the Finance Committee was doing any work around that particular topic.
Yes, I believe that that does fall into it. That is way back in the beginning when we first started addressing reimbursement based on readiness and performance standards, and then a second one was treat and release, is that the committee voted to actually combine those two things because we agree completely. It's not so much of us going out on 911 calls and we treat and release patients. It's really about providing service. And so our methods are really taking it from a context of getting paid for the service that we provide versus responding and what we want to do. So I think that would incorporate that, yes.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Before we go to safety, any other questions for any of the committees or committee chairs from any of the council members? Dr. Patterson, would you please give us a little overview of the position statements that you sent to the full council, as well as a little background as you feel appropriate.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. thanks, everybody, Aaron, Noah. First, let me give some background on where we, how we got to where we are today, and sort of a qualifying bit of information about the background on these two position statements. So we had one of our seminal meetings back in April, a face-to-face meeting with all of our newer NMSAC members and subcommittee members, and we spent the better part of half of one of those days with our subcommittees discussing our assignments handed to us by NMSAC after the result of the bucket list. And we focused on, well, first let me tell you what we were our assignments are. Our assignments were a culture of safety, ambulance crashes, and behavioral safety issues. Well, as you can all deduce, those are fairly broad assignments. So we decided that we would focus our attention on that first meeting on trying to operationalize some focus areas that we could attack within our power in our subcommittee. And what we came up with and what we reported on in the minutes in the April meeting was that we were going to focus on the intersection between leadership and safety culture, EVOC training, emergency vehicle operations course training, the application of crew resource management principles to EMS, and we also threw in there some aeromedical perspective issues. And we discussed one issue in particular, limited use of existing resources such as weather stations that may be absent from the monitoring grid for aeromedical services. So after that meeting, we decided to set up monthly conference calls in addition to a variety of emails, use of email for discussion with our group. And we've had three conference calls since that meeting. And our game plan was to first develop position statements or advisories based on the consensus of our subcommittee. And our subcommittee voted unanimously to develop position statements on these two particular issues that were brought to the meeting today. And so our model for these position statements has been the previously published position statements that you can find on EMS.gov. In the position statements link. So we use those as our model. And we've had three rounds of editing and revising the current ones that you see before you today. And let me just talk briefly about each of those. Okay, so I'll talk first about the emergency vehicle operator education, training, and safety position statement, which the title of that is very much open to editing, however others may see fit. We decided that there's been a lot of work out there. Our group decided that there's been a lot of work out there recently by other organizations or committees or groups that may parallel with the issue of operator vehicle training. And so we decided to take the comments and suggestions and concerns from our subcommittee and put those into the position statement that you see before you. So, again, that's been through three revisions and edits since our meeting in April. And it's not designed to address every single element or component of EVOC or Emergency Vehicle Operator Course training. It's designed to address set some parameters around what our subcommittee feels are very appropriate and relevant at this time. That does not mean that we don't feel that other issues are important. We do. There are plenty of other issues related to what you see in the draft that could be expanded upon, which we are very much open to developing additional position statements or advisories on. So let me just say that. Now, with respect to the second position statement, again, our assignment was culture of safety, and we narrowed that down to focusing on the intersection between leadership and a culture of safety. And again, our discussions led to what you see before you in that draft today. Each of those bulleted components listed in that statement can be expanded upon, but we felt that we needed to really focus these statements so that they are clear and short and to the point. And again, both of these position statements are what we feel the foundation from which we can build or propose advisories for. Our game plan was to let's get some position statements out there, feel confident about those, have those sort of set the framework or parameter for some of these issues that we can then build position statements on. I'm sorry, advisories on and other products. Sorry if you're hearing the sirens in the background. I'm close to the main thoroughfare through the to the ED. So with that, I'm very much open to suggestions, comments, edits from the NMSAC, from the public, from everyone. We went through quite a few rounds of edits and revisions on these. We need additional input. Let me also say that each of these position statements can be expanded upon on one or more of the issues that are addressed. And I'll give an example. One of the position statements that related to EVOC addresses fatigue management. And one of the bullets addresses the fatigue management. Well, fatigue is a specific focus area that we want to address in a different position statement. And we didn't want to devote a ton of material or a lengthy series of bullets or paragraphs to fatigue in this one position statement. We wanted to just address it as clearly as possible, leaving for us additional work to do related specifically to fatigue and its intersection with safety. So with that, I'll turn it over back to Aaron and Noah for next steps.
So what I'd like to suggest to the council is we take them one at a time. And so maybe let's draw our attention first to the emergency vehicle operator education, training, and safety position statement. And I'd like to also encourage the council members to recognize that we use our committees to do our work and the council to provide direction and feedback. So with that, I would open up the floor to thoughts and opinions. And again, if you're on the webinar tool, if you would please raise your hand. And then if you're not on the webinar tool, if you'd identify yourself on the line, and I will do my best to call on people so we don't have people walking over. And I notice Kyle is very compliant and has his hand up. Kyle, please go ahead.
Thank you, Aaron. Let me just say first, this is a very nice piece of work. I appreciate the data analysis and the evidence-based process you're trying to work through with your committee. One of my concerns is that there really isn't very, very much data, and the data that there is doesn't, and I haven't read all of these documents, but the data that there is isn't perfectly linked to the outcomes we're trying to achieve. What I'm wondering is there is within the Department of Transportation, I believe, the NTSB that analyzes mostly aircraft crashes, but other things as well. And, you know, I'm wondering under the number six, can we break out there's two components to that number six. One is local organizations involved in delivery. Second is national authorities, and I think we should break out number six into two separate sections and ask NHTSA, DOT, NTSB to do some comprehensive studies on ambulance crashes at the national level. and see if we can have a much better understanding of what causes those crashes, and second, have a much better understanding of what interventions we can take to prevent those crashes.
Thanks. I know, Drew, a question I just heard was NTSB part of DOT. My recollection is that's not correct.
Yeah, Kyle, NTSB itself is not a part of the Department of Transportation. It is a separate congressionally chartered agency that is separate from DOT. You just, this is for your information.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, and thanks for that, Drew. I knew they were separate. I didn't know they were separate from DOT. I thought they were sort of a separate part of DOT. But regardless, is it appropriate for this council to make recommendations not just to DOT but to agencies outside of DOT, namely NTSB?
A couple of things, Kyle. One is, as we begin making recommendations, that kind of takes this beyond a position statement. That would then take us into the advisories and into the recommendation phases of this. So it is possible to make recommendations to other agencies through DOT, so we can make them to other Plankins members, and we probably could, we haven't done that, could probably make them to NTSB. But that would not be done just through through our internal mechanism at NEMSAC. Would not be done through a position statement. That would be kind of the next statement as we go through the advisories and the formal recommendations phase of it. So would not be done through this mechanism, but it is possible to certainly make recommendations. Does that help, Kyle?
Yeah, that helps. I think this is really an important issue. We have to get our arms around this because, I mean, on the news sites, I mean, there's just crashes every day.
Yeah, just jumping in briefly using the chair's prerogative here just for a moment. Kyle, I completely agree. One of the things that is missing, as you mentioned, is data. Many states collect data about vehicle crashes, but to pull the ambulance component out of that is difficult because it's not a data element, or it's not, you know, separated from the Ford Focus kind of thing. So that might be, as we have this discussion, feedback that we're sharing back to Daniel and the Safety Committee is that support, as they mentioned, in bullet point six of that gap of data and who might be able to gather it and where it might be at. Others?
Troy was next.
Okay, Troy, you're next, please.
Okay, I completely agree with both Kyle and Aaron on that part. You know, maybe just making it a little bit more generic and saying develop a national repository for ambulance crashes and a mechanism of which to put it in, but I don't think it should be voluntary, and I think we do need to report those accidents. Second part of that is should we declare whether either at the EMT or paramedic level or any of that nature, or at least consider that driving is a core competency for EMS, and if so, could we recommend or suggest that it be placed into EMT or paramedic courses or both, so they have a baseline, and then it can go through the credentialing process along with paramedic programs and so forth to ensure that there is a baseline understanding and minimum standards for EVOC.
Is a desire to encourage your committee to quickly take it from a position statement, which is as I, in my brain, it looks like a path. And so number six is a path that says today we don't have data, in the future we'd like to have data. And council members are saying, so the way to get it is through a repository or this or that, which for the council really becomes this more of that advisory. So Drew, help me here. So my way I'm hearing it in my mind is advisories have recommendations. We would encourage thou shall, maybe that's a little strong, and position statements are more of the path. Here's where we'd like to eventually get to, but we're not sure what might be necessary there. So the position statement is asking the council, hey, do you agree that this path is an important one, such as number six, getting data?
I think position statements are just kind of intended to reflect the sense of the council on an issue. We haven't used them that commonly in terms of position statements. They've been intended to focus on an important area. We certainly developed a position statement on we've developed them on fairly time-sensitive issues, such as the lead agency, where there was an immediate need to provide feedback. We provided one on the frequency issue. We provided one on
healthcare reform.
So there have been several that have been fairly time-sensitive. I think there's nothing wrong with doing a position statement, but if we're looking at eventually doing some recommendations to NHTSA and or our federal partners, there's some fairly specific recommendations, it may be better to begin casting it in the form of advisories and putting it through the advisory process. So eventually, if the idea is you eventually want to make some very specific recommendations to us or to others, then if that's a path that we really want to head down, it might be better to head down that path from the beginning, start doing the advisories and so forth. If that really is where we want to, if that's the sense of the council, if you want to end up with some specific recommendations to us. I'd look to Noah and Susan, but as well.
Interesting to know, Dave.
Okay, so why don't we just hold that thought for a moment. Let's all be thinking about that, because, again, that would be important feedback for the council to give Daniel and the Safety Committee. So, as Drew, as you're saying, they could begin that process or take those next steps. Noah, who would be next?
Ritu raised his hand next.
Doctor?
Hello. Couple of comments on a topic that I know very little about. So this is, I guess, questions from ignorance and comments from ignorance. But, you know, lack of knowledge has never stopped me from having an opinion before. So the issue around data, you know, the one piece that we talked about with data is ambulance crashes. And there's always this discussion of not only ambulance crashes, but crashes caused by an ambulance, in which none of the vehicles that are identified are actually an ambulance. And so, and that becomes a lot tougher to identify, but I don't know if we should have some kind of shout out or comment or mention about that. And a sort of core or side issue on ambulance safety that I don't know if this is the place for it or not, but I would throw it up there is, again, this is in my understanding, and again, I don't know much about it, is that the amount of engineering safety in our ambulance fleet is significantly less than the amount of engineering safety even in the passenger car world or in other vehicles, and that is there somewhere in someone correct me if I'm wrong, because this is just my understanding, but is there somewhere in here that we talk about, you know, being a good public health person and you can't have NHTSA without talking about Haddon's Matrix, but talking about engineering solutions also in reducing injury and disability? And then the third comment I had is related to Troy's comment about driving as a core competency, and I just think that that's a while I understand it, it's not. It would not be a small change in thought process. It would be a quite a big leap for our educational system as well as our national certification. And I think we would need to take that all into account before we kind of included that in that driving as a core competency kind of situation. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Tom?
Yeah, this just to follow up on Kyle, just because of some other work that I've done with the NTSB. The NTSB actually has done a preliminary look at ground ambulances. This was done, at the behest of one of the somebody asked the question. And they decided, the board decided not to pursue a full study. I think it would probably be good for this, if this group felt so inclined, to make that recommendation to NTSB. There actually was a fairly substantial amount of work done, you know, including these, you know, wake crashes, et cetera, that Ritu just put on. So just for people's thoughts as a recommendation going forward.
Thank you. I don't see any other hands on the webinar. Oh, I just saw one go up. Kyle, before I call on you again, let me check for those that aren't on the webinar that are on the conference call line. Is there anyone on the conference call line only that has a question, comment, thought that they'd like to share from the council? All right, Kyle, please.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, and maybe this is a question for Drew. And Drew, does the Department of Transportation compel motor vehicle crash reporting by the states, on the part of the states?
Kyle, this is Susan. Every state is collecting and has, through their traffic record system, the full crash database, which is primarily the police crash report that constitutes that. And then they also, in each state, have a FARS analyst. That's our fatality analysis reporting system. And they have a person in each state that's the FARS analyst that looks specifically from those reports and then tries to get a hold of other reports, either EMS or hospital or otherwise, to try to get more detail on the fatalities so we can learn how those can be prevented through vehicle design and other behavioral safety programs. So, yes, that is a piece of it. And that's one reason that the NHTSA Section 408 funding has been made available to the state EMS programs to help with NEMSIS funding, because they recognize that the EMS information, particularly related to motor vehicle crashes, is critical to their understanding and future improvements, both in EMS as well as in vehicle safety and behavioral programs and things.
Susan, are states required to collect that data, or are they incentivized? So essentially, to get those dollars, they need to collect.
I believe, and I'm not positive on this, but I believe that there is a requirement for them to get at least fundamental information through and make that available to the FARS analysts and to other folks and certain of the data systems that NHTSA has. But they also have a state data system that they've set up where they're collecting voluntary data from the states that's a bit more information. And that's a voluntary program. And they also, similar to NEMSIS, have developed a model minimum uniform crash criteria. that is incentivized through 408, where they're encouraging people to collect more standardized data on those police crash reports.
Okay. Thank you.
Aaron?
Yes, Kyle.
Aaron, and the reason for my question is you know, in the context of this position statement, is it out of bounds to recommend that mandatory crash reporting requirement include EMS vehicles? And I'm not just talking about ambulances, but you know, vehicles that respond to emergency medical events, whether they're fire trucks or motorcycles or, you know, staff cars or, you know, Suburbans, whatever they are. Is it possible to establish a position statement on behalf of NEMSAC that seeks that mandatory information?
So as my understanding, if the council wanted to make a recommendation, that becomes an advisory, which we certainly could do. We would just need to and want to give that feedback to Daniel's group, and then they would bring us a draft of the advisory. We would have a chance to review it. It could be approved, then it becomes interim, and then it would eventually become approved to be final. So it's just those two processes. One we can do, which provides more of the position, and one is more of the recommendations.
Okay, one final question for Daniel. Daniel, are you looking for a motion right now?
Am I on still?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, no, as far as I understand it, I just get comments this time around, and then when we have our face-to-face meeting, we take it to the NEMSEC for motion.
Okay, my recommendation then would be just to put a paragraph after the first sentence in number 6, which would create a new number 7, dealing with national authorities rather than local authorities.
Okay. Aaron, is it okay if I make a clarifying comment now?
Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, so far for your comments. Very helpful. We need to be very aggressive gaining feedback on these position statements and also on others that we produce in the future. So I really, really appreciate your input. It's very vital that we have that prior to taking this thing to the September meeting. But let me make one quick clarification. A lot of the comments that I hear are sort of gravitating towards ambulance crashes and data collected on ambulance crashes. And we are addressing that issue in our subcommittee. But I think the principal underlying focus of this draft position statement addresses the education and training of EMTs and paramedics or emergency vehicle operators in general, depending, you know, because they have a different type of model of EMS delivery. And I want to frame this position statement in an analogy, a metaphor, I guess. Okay, so imagine you're doing an analysis and your main outcome of interest was ambulance crashes, and your main exposure variable, independent variable of interest, was driver training and education. Well, you want to make sure that you control for all the other things that could possibly confound that relationship. And so all the bullet points there are those things that we believe in our subcommittee could possibly confound the true association between driver education training, operational issues behind the wheel, the relationship between driver education training behind the wheel and safety outcomes, i.e. ambulance crashes or events related to injury or bad outcomes associated with being in the vehicle. This position statement doesn't directly focus on ambulance crashes itself. Again, we do believe that is a very important issue. We need to clarify what data sources are out there, what those data sources do, the process by which the data is collected and may have barriers at different points, whether it be local, state, national. But that's not what this position statement addresses. So I wanted to throw that out there that I really much appreciate the comments, but I think we're gravitating more towards the issue of crashes and not the principal focus of what this statement tries to convey.
This is Paul Morris.
I need to step in here just for a moment and do a couple things. I noticed for two of you have your hand up. I need to put us on a little pause. Sabina has a timeline for us, and she's going to give us an update on the Culture of Safety Strategy Project, and she needs to be gone at 3:30. It's now 3:15. So I'd like to pause us from this discussion and ask her to give us an update on the Culture of Safety project, and then we'll return to this conversation. But I need to also mention to the group we have another position statement from the Safety Committee to discuss, as well as public comment period at 3:45, with a goal for us to be done at 4. So please bear with me as I try to keep us moving forward. So, Sabina, could you please give us an update on the Culture of Safety Project?
May I check in?
And who is this?
This is Paul Edward Morris from Kirkland, Washington, just checking in.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, this is Sabina. Can you all hear me?
I can.
We can.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Aaron, for the intro. And since I hear that you guys are very pressed for time, I'll try to be very brief. But I did want to share an update on the Culture of Safety project that we are working on behalf of both ASAP and the steering committee, as we're really beginning the development and promotion of this Culture of Safety project between NHTSA and ASAP. So I know some of you were at the conference, and we really appreciate you being involved in lending not only your individual expertise, but also sort of the balance and the flavor of NEMSAC to the meeting as we got started. We think the conference that was held on June 27th and 28th in D.C., which had about 100 participants, was really pivotal in launching the development of the strategy, and that it was actually successful in its goal, which was to bring together the experts not only from within the EMS community and its stakeholders, but also from outside to help facilitate discussion really around that 30,000-foot level that Dr. Patterson just mentioned, that, you know, we're really trying to get to that level and not be down on the individual level. We did hear from a number of folks, including Dr. Patterson, Scott Griffith, folks from the IHI and the insurance industry, and really one of the things that seemed to really connect with the group were some of the things around the just culture and building on Sidney Decker's work that Scott Griffith touched on related to the airline industry and how they really had created a safety culture and giving us some insight into how EMS could potentially do that. So there were a number, I believe you all probably have available to you the agenda that we used. I won't belabor that. But really out of those 2 days of meetings, the steering committee then came together afterwards to figure out where is the foundation for this project. And we came up with four foundational areas that we felt needed to be addressed for this effort to succeed. The first of those is data. The need for reporting, analysis, research, near-miss reporting, and things like that that really give us very specific objective information on where we are now and then how any changes that we implement produce improvement. The second of those is education, which included basic job training, but is also the leadership component that also has already been mentioned in your conversations today, and ongoing education to really permeate the profession with the idea that safety is a part of every single thing we do. It's not just a leadership thing. It needs to be pervasive within the profession. So education is an important component of that. The third element was standard setting and regulatory bodies. to provide for accountability, public policy support, potentially laws and things like that that are needed to support this effort, as well as funding. And finally, the fourth thing is a coordination component that really, so that this is not a static thing, but a living, ongoing effort, that this is managed somewhere, that somebody takes responsibility for sort of shepherding this thing along as it's as it grows up, but also maintaining it as we continue going forward. And that specific component addresses administration, perpetuation of the project, but also stewardship and integration. Then as we go forward, just kind of talking about what is the strategy going to look like, the first draft is currently under development with the Red Flash Group, and I believe a couple of those folks are listening in on the call so they can get your thoughts as you share them. The technical writing team has been doing interviews with industry leaders and safety experts, looking at background materials and really looking at some of the past agenda documents that have been done, so, and talking to some of the folks that were leaders of those, so we can build on the things that went well with those and try to avoid some of the pitfalls that have been encountered in the implementation of those documents as we try to do this, as well as other in-depth interviews and things like that. What we've come to as they begin this draft is that the first portion of the strategy will address the goal and the vision of the strategy, as well as the basic process that we'll need to undertake for cultural change to take place, using examples from these other industries that have already been mentioned, and allowing us to learn from both the successes and mistakes of the other industries, but also recognizing that solutions that work elsewhere can't just be transposed into EMS without significant considerations of what the realities of our current culture and our work environment are. So the first section includes that part. The second half of the strategy then includes a component that the steering committee thought was very important and many of the participants thought was vital, which is that we be very pragmatic about addressing those four key foundational areas that I mentioned. And providing specific milestones on the path towards this pervasive culture of safety, so that it isn't something where we have a great big vision that really doesn't have a path to get there. So we really felt like, both from the steering committee perspective as well as the participants, that these milestones and this very pragmatic second half of the strategy is an important component towards making this a successful venture. I think I will wrap it up there. The first draft of the strategy is due to NHTSA on August the 31st and will be shared with the steering committee as well. And I think I'll just open it up to some questions then. I appreciate the privilege of participating in this project and am happy to do anything I can to answer questions or provide any additional information.
Council members, we're getting just a little bit of background noise, so if you wouldn't mind, please mute your lines, the star six. So, Savita, I have one question. I know this project is near and dear to many of the council members' hearts. It's been something that the council has set as kind of a guiding principle. How in the future will council members have a chance to participate and or get updates?
We do have a website, the www.emscultureofsafety.org, but which is open to anybody to provide input. But, of course, I'm helping lead the project, but I think we welcome input from anybody from any source. So they're free to contact me if they'd like to, and I can share things with the steering committee or the project team. But we're looking for all the help we can get. So if people have great ideas, we definitely want to hear them.
You're on the project. Just help Sabine out a little bit. Everybody individually is welcome to comment on any of the drafts that go out. If the NMSAC so finds a way to provide input before the next piece I'm going to talk about, to provide your comments to us and to the Culture Safety Project, those would certainly be welcome and accepted. But the good news, the most important news, is towards the end of this project, at the end of the 3 years, there is a specific requirement where there will be a NEMSAC draft developed, and that will be an opportunity to formally get the NEMSAC late in the process before it goes final to say, yes, this is kind of what we had in mind as one of our biggest, most critical recommendations so many years ago, if you will, and we move forward in the process. Having said that, I think the other part for that was when we plan regular updates, and much like we've done for this meeting, Noah and I will continue every time the NEMSAC formally meets to make arrangements for somebody from the team to come and present, as Sabina has done, to give an update and get some input from you all. So that's already going to be scheduled.
Great. Thank you. Looks like Kyle, you have a comment, question?
Yeah, I just wanted to understand if the culture of safety project primarily focuses on worker safety, but also on patient safety.
The project really is trying to cross all safety related aspects. So it's not just worker safety, it's not just vehicle safety, it's not just patient safety, it's all of those.
Thank you.
Doctor?
Yes.
No, the other doctor. Sorry. Dr. Sani.
Yeah, just follow up on Dave's comments. Just want to put it out there that our committee, the Oversight and Research Committee, has a particular interest in this project and would certainly, unfortunately I was unable to attend the conference, although I wanted to, certainly interested in whatever updates are available in the interim as well as whatever assistance or interaction we can provide.
Thank you, and we will take that as an invitation to call both of you.
I know
Sabina,
one of
you
the...
know you can call me whenever you need to.
I know, Ritu.
I know one of the difficult decisions in the project was having one of the committees be a point on behalf of the council when many, if not all, of the committees are deeply passionate about safety. And so the safety committee is kind of that point, but clearly has overlap with all of the committees as well. So other questions, comments? On the culture of safety project. All right. One of the things I guess I'll just share, it looks like we have a little bit more than a minute and a half before our public comment period is. Both Sabina and myself had a chance to give a very brief update at the Pinnacle Conference. And I know I found that very valuable to ensure that leaders knew about the council, and I heard a lot of positive comments as well from folks after Sabina's presentation about the culture of safety project. So, you know, really appreciate you doing that on our behalf to keep kind of the community aware of the projects we're working on. So I'm just going to fill a little bit of time. Once we finish the public comment period, we will come back to the discussion on the emergency vehicle operator education training safety position paper. We also have the intersection between leadership, culture of safety position paper. We also have an update from Drew from FICOMS, and then just a wrap up. So again, we need to use good use of the time that we have left. So that really brings us up to the public comment period. So if we have public members that are on the Drew is giving me the countdown. If we have public comments from the public that is on the webinar, if you would please do us the same and raise your hand on the webinar tool. If we have public comments that are on the conference call line, if you would please identify yourself, who you are, kind of the organization or a location that you represent, and then please feel free. I'll identify you, and then you can speak. So I'm not seeing anyone on the webinar tool. Is anyone on the conference call line that would like to, from the public, would like to identify themselves and be recognized to speak? So if you're on the audio conference call, again, that's a #6. If you're on the webinar tool, I believe you click on your name, and that will allow you to raise your hand. I'm not sure that I know I have to call on this person. I'm not sure that I want to. But I see this name, Dia Gaynor, wants to speak. Please go ahead. #6, Dia.
Why, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the council. Is this better?
Yeah, we can hear you now, unfortunately.
My name is Dia Gaynor. I'm the executive director of the National Association of State EMS Officials. Some of you may fondly recall me as the band formerly known as the NEMSAC chair. All of the matters that the NEMSAC committee chairs spoke to are of great importance to NSEMSO. There are two in particular that I would just like to amplify upon. First is the matter of ambulance crashes. Susan McHenry mentioned the model minimum uniform crash criteria, if you will, the NEMSIS-like dictionary of data collected at crash scenes by law enforcement officers. And she and I are serving on the expert panel for the revision to version 4.0. And much to my chagrin, we're encountering significant resistance to something as simple as adding an ambulance seating diagram to show the location of crew and patients in the back of an ambulance when the law enforcement officer is conducting their investigation. So any and all focus on that subject is welcomed because, as you know, one federal counterpart put it, there were only 12 deaths in ambulances in the most recent recorded year. And so I encourage your work in that area and look forward to an advisory on the subject. Secondly is the matter that was brought up by the Systems Committee as it relates to the legal recognition of EMS personnel crossing state lines. I just want to inform the council members that NSEMSO has developed a project proposal to develop a model interstate compact that would solve that issue of those transient or occasional or even bordering state line crossings, if you will, much in the same way that EMAC has done so for disaster conditions. A model interstate compact for EMS personnel licensure would solve it for the day-to-day incidents. That concludes my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Are there others that would like to speak?
Yes.
Going once.
Hello?
Twice. If somebody's trying to get in, I'm sorry, we're just not hearing you. If you're trying to get in, maybe, again, the #6, not star, #6 to unmute, and please speak loudly. Yeah, I'm sorry if somebody is trying to get in. We're not hearing you. Just for all of the public to know, you can send written comments to NOAA, and then they can be forwarded to the council. Hearing no other public comments, we'll move forward. I'll bring us back to our conversation on the first position paper, Emergency Vehicle Operator Education, Training, and Safety. We've had a lot of good discussion with good feedback for the Safety Committee, and we've had some discussion about the differences between position papers and advisories. And my guess is we'll probably have a little bit more about that at our September meeting to get a better understanding. We have only used the position papers in the past for a few specific things, such as the lead agency, healthcare reform, the D block. So are there any other council members that have comments on the emergency vehicle operator position paper? Hearing none, I'm going to move us along, recognizing again that there may be technological problems and somebody might be trying to get in. I'd encourage you to reach out to either NOAA or council members specifically to reach out to Daniel, the chair of the Safety Committee, if there were thoughts and ideas that you had on the first position paper that you weren't able to share or you wanted to provide more detail that time didn't allow. Bring us now to the second position paper, which was the intersection of leadership and the culture of safety. Thoughts, ideas, suggestions, opinions on the second position paper, and again, just reminding the council members of the time we have left. So you please use the webinar tool to identify yourself, or if you're on the conference call line only, please break in with the pound six and let us know that you'd like to speak. So, Troy, please go ahead.
Okay. I think, Daniel, great job on this and the whole safety committee. I think it lays out, and I cannot agree more that leadership is an important part of developing that culture. Or when I'm reading through it, I'm trying to figure out is I agree with every statement in here, but how do I do it? Is there envisioning, again, another follow-up document about recommendation of the development of a toolkit or something of that nature that we as EMS leaders could take and say, okay, this is how I actually accomplish these bullets? Because as we talk about culture and some of those things, it's hard to say, how am I going to do that?
Am I on? This is Daniel.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. The short answer is yes, there will be a follow-up to this. Sort of as I tried to describe before, we want to set sort of the framework for discussion on these issues, and I particularly feel that we need to convey not only to the greater NMSAC, but also to the public EMS community at large, that we have thoughtfully, carefully, and with sufficient time examined a lot of the issues that these position statements try to convey before we come out with an advisory that would say thou shalt, you know, to an agency, to a national organization, to individual EMS providers. I personally feel that coming out with an advisory that is in the frame of thou shalt do this or that is a little far ahead and may encounter some resistance if we don't show first that we've given these issues some sufficient thought. And that's one of the reasons why we decided to go with the position statements, because I think our group has articulated in our meetings that we do need to kind of put a frame of reference around these issues to sort of preface the advisory. And that's one of my feelings on the issue. I hope that clarifies it. If not, I'll try to explain it better.
Thank you. Tom, please go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Troy, one of the places that, because a lot of this work has actually been done in aviation, and the FAA is actually moving ahead with these whole ideas of safety management systems, there is, you know, for everybody here, there's the IHST, the International Helicopter Safety Team project It's a joint initiative of industry and the FAA, similar model to when they did the commercial aviation safety team, you know, back in the 70s, which really transformed, commercial aviation. But on that, if you go to www.ihst.org, there actually are toolboxes to, you know, how does an organization, you know, of any size develop a safety management. So, I would follow up with Dan. I think that absolutely there's an intent to follow this up, with a more detailed paper about how you can do this. But there are places out there. I agree, people are going to go, how do I do this? There actually are places out there that we just need to be able to get people to go that they might not necessarily go to from the EMS world.
May I comment?
And who is that?
Paul Morris from Kirkland, Washington.
Actually not. That's what we have that public comment period for. So let me get through council members, and if we still have time available, we could see if we can get that in. Other council members. All right. Daniel, do you have any anything to ask of the council or any additional feedback or direction you need to prepare for the September meeting?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm sorry I keep asking. I'm curious to know if I'm on or not. Please share your comments, your concerns, your suggestions for edits to these two documents via email or call me. I'm more than happy, and that goes for the NMSAC and also for anybody else who's on the line. You can reach me via email at PattersonD, PatterSonD at upmc.edu, and please offer any suggestions. Again, it is with great humility that I lead this subcommittee. I'm very honored to be on this. I'm working with a great bunch of people from all over the nation in our subcommittee and with the NMSAC in general. Your comments and edits are very important. I want to be as aggressive as possible in gaining your feedback so that when we do take this to the next step, that everybody is on the same page. Everybody feels like their concerns have been addressed, either in the positive or the negative. If you have a comment, I will make sure that you are addressed in one way or another with a response. So please contact me, email me something, call me, and I'll be more than happy to address any concern. Thanks.
Thanks, Daniel. Paul, I'll call on you. I'm sorry I missed your last name. If you'd please identify yourself, who you either represent or where you're from, and then if you would please be brief.
Yes, sir. This is Paul, like the apostle, Morris, like the cat, Morris. I am a volunteer EMT with Mountain View Fire and Rescue, which is King County Fire District 44, also a volunteer EMT with the Seattle King County Public Health Reserve Corps. Just in reference to the culture of safety, I'm basically suggesting that the state of Washington has a very good program called EVAP as part of the core curriculum for EMT students called Emergency Vehicle Accident Prevention. And it covers lots and lots of areas relating to driving, intersection safety, and also watching for each other as, you know, co-pilot on the right. So I just wanted to suggest that the state of Washington has that as part of their requirements for certification. It's called EVAP, and also police officers go through that too. Since I am in a live clinic today at my primary care facility, I just wanted to make a comment that I had been asked to give prior to this particular webinar, and that is a comment in regards to volunteer EMTs, to elevate them in a manner in which they can establish a more prominent role in EMS, particularly as a cost savings to municipalities, having one volunteer to one career EMT so that we might be able to trim our budgets and also to give it volunteer EMTs opportunity for increased education and experience on the job, which could, you know, blossom into some future career opportunity for that particular volunteer. So those are my comments. I'm sorry I went over, but that's it. Are you still with me?
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Is it appropriate for me to?
Thank you. So we're at 3:45. So Daniel, I think you've got a lot of great feedback from the council, and we'll be looking for something at the September meeting. So we can certainly chat some more about the position statements versus the advisories between now and then. So 3:45, why don't we transition to the update from the July 12th FICOMS meeting. Drew.
Thanks, Aaron. I think the July FICOMS meeting was very productive. It was probably one of our best attended FICOMS meetings since the group was created in 2005. One of the highlights of the meeting was, I'm not sure I want to say this, one of the highlights of the meeting was the former NEMSAC chair and current NSEMSO executive director, Dia Gaynor, who provided an overview of two products that she led the development of, which were included in our interim report to NTSB safety recommendation that was made to FICOMS. The model inventory of emergency care elements and the EMS incident readiness and response assessment were presented to and adopted by FICOMS as an interim report to the NTSB. Both MICE and ERA, as they are affectionately known, together form a set of guidelines for local emergency services agencies to use when responding to repair, when preparing to respond to rural roadway, preparing to respond to rural roadway crashes, especially when involving multiple patients. If Dia is available, we would love to have her present on both of these at our next in-person FICOMS meeting. I believe that she has accepted that presentation. I know that you'll find that fascinating. She and the NSEMSO HITS committee have done an absolutely remarkable job in preparing those documents. I think they'll be of tremendous utility to each of the states, and not just in preparedness, but in looking at the day-to-day preparation as well. Another highlight of the meeting was a presentation by Dr. Greg Mears from the EMS Performance Improvement Center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And he provided the preliminary and as yet unpublished results from the National EMS Assessment. So we've talked a bit about the National EMS Assessment at prior council meetings, but the National EMS Assessment is going through final clearance now at both here at NHTSA, and at FICOMS, and it should be available at the December FICOMS meeting, NEMSAC meeting, for review by NEMSAC and by members of the public. Hopefully, it will be available for review prior to then. But the assessment contains a number of really exciting, kind of never-known-before data points, including the best estimate we have, at least, of the number of licensed EMS personnel, EMS agencies in the nation that we've had to date. We're actually really excited about the publication of the National EMS Assessment. Kathy Gottschall from our office has served as a staff liaison for the project. And while she's unable to join us this afternoon, be happy to take questions to the extent that we can, but I think it contains a wealth of information
that has a great snapshot of just a tremendous variety of EMS information from throughout the nation. I know that NEFSAC will be excited to see it. Just unable to share it right at the moment. But so questions, if there are any questions about the findings, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to take those.
Thanks. Are there any questions from any of the council members for Drew on either of those two matters? Drew, do you foresee maybe not the September meeting, just based on how fast that's coming up, but a future meeting, a formal presentation on the national assessment?
I think a formal presentation could be arranged. I think that would be great.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what the timing of it will be, but I think a presentation would be very much in order, and I think the council would find that extremely interesting.
Great.
Absolutely.
Any other questions from anyone for Drew? All right. So we're really kind of at the end of our agenda, really the end of our time. Drew, did you have any closing thoughts, comments for us?
Just briefly. First, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend today. And I know Dr. Braithwaite has left the call, but particularly appreciate her presentation on behalf of ASAP. I think the Culture of Safety Project is well on track, going well, and I think that Sabina's lending tremendous leadership to the project. I think that the group that met in June was it was a great conference, and I think it was I think everyone found it that way. The next in-person meeting at NEFSAC, as you know, is going to be September 7th and 8th at the Hyatt in Arlington. It's just outside of Washington, D.C., just a block from the Roslyn Metro. And there will be a Federal Register notice published on that very shortly, and we'll get out the specific information to it, both public and to you folks. And also our December in-person meeting, which I think you already know, but it will be held in the Washington, D.C. area on December 13th and 14th. All of the NEMSAC meetings are open to the public, and we encourage the public to attend any of those and to comment on those. If you have questions about NEMSAC, you can go to www.ems.gov to find any of the past meeting materials or to contact any of our staff. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will turn it back to you.
Thank you. Drew or Noah, do you have any logistic information for the council for the upcoming meeting?
I would say that members of the NEMSAC should have received a memo from our contractor regarding travel logistics for the September meeting. If you could work with our contractor to quickly get your travel booked, we would certainly appreciate it. If you have any questions, you should please feel free to contact me anytime. Look forward to seeing you all in September.
Thanks. I wanted to echo a couple things that Drew mentioned. First is having the opportunity to have participated in that first meeting of the Council of Culture of Safety Project. I was equally very impressed of the work of ASAP, of the work of Sabina, of the work of Red Flash. It was very exciting, and I thought it was well done. Thought it really used everyone's time extremely well. I really appreciated that. And so to the staff, thank you very much. I was very impressed with that. So, David, thank you. And, again, I want to also thank folks for taking the time to do this webinar conference call. I know these are really hard. I would love for us to only meet in person and to meet in person all of the time, but it simply doesn't work. We simply don't have the resources. None of us have the schedules to allow for that. So I appreciate folks sitting for a couple hours in front of their phone and computer and allowing us to continue It's just so exciting to be in this role right now as the chair with all of the great work that's been done, and feels like we're really moving. The committees are really doing great work. The work of that Daniel presented today is really exciting. So the thing that I really want to encourage the council members is, I know we're all extremely busy, but the committees are where we do a lot of the work. The committees can meet more often. The committees can really deliberate on subjects differently than the council can. And so I just really encourage us to dig in and do that work. Reach out when things become public to the groups and stakeholders we represent, so that all of their voices can be heard as well. So I look forward to seeing everybody in September and having a busy but a very productive meeting, and making sure that Ms. Gaynor only speaks for a very specific period of time.
There'll be a finite period of time. And she'll have to be certified in the use of the microphone.
Yes, exactly. DM, make sure that you bring that certification with you. Ritu, did you have something to add here at the end?
Just a logistics question. The meeting, will it be the same format, committees, and then half-day NEMSAC, and then the next half-day?
That's correct, Dr. Sani. We have not finalized the agenda yet, but this will be a day-and-a-half meeting. September 7th, a Wednesday, we'll begin with approximately 4 hours of in-person committee meetings at the hotel, and the full NEMSAC will convene in the afternoon of September 7th, and then end at noon, 12 o'clock noon, on September 8th.
And I would assume there would be, maybe I shouldn't assume this, but would there be conference call capabilities for the committees for the non-council members to participate?
That's correct. Any ad hoc NEMSAC committee members are welcome to participate over the phone via conference call during those during that morning session on the first day.
Anything else for the good of the order? Any of the council members? All right. I think we're right at our pretty close to our adjournment time. I do need a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
And I'm second.
I have a motion and a second. Again, we'll use the negative. So if you object to us adjourning, please say so. Otherwise, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great and safe day.
Bye.